What time is it? Do you know what time it is? That's right, it's time for a bonus episode today on the All Things to All People podcast. I'll tell you about it in just a few seconds. Let's get to it. Welcome back to the All Things to All People podcast with Michael Burns. I am Michael Burns. And today we're having a special bonus episode, which means we're breaking away a little bit from our normal routine of going through, right now, Escaping the Beast. And today we're going to look at, well, we're going to have a group of guests today, and we're going to look at the question, is the next generation losing faith? I'm excited about our panel today. Last year, we had a group of young people on the show. Well, first I did an episode that was pulled from the book we were going through at the time, my book, All Things to All People. And we were talking about the generation culture gap between the older generations and the younger generations. And followed that up with a panel of three young people at the time, just delving into the question of why statistics seem to show, it doesn't just seem that young people are walking away from the church in large numbers, but statistics bear that out. And so I wanted to hear some of the challenges culturally and otherwise that young folks were having in the modern church today. And that has turned out, those two episodes, especially the second one with the guest panel, has turned out to be extremely popular, and we've gotten a lot of really good feedback from that. A lot of people want to continue that conversation and carry it on. And so we're going to do that from time to time, including today. And so today we're actually going to have five young people on. They're all amazing in their own right. And I'm excited to hear from them and introduce them to you. So let's turn to that and get going without any further ado. So as I said, we have some special guests today, and I'm excited. I'm going to actually not introduce them. I'm going to have each of them introduce themselves just a little bit. And I'm going to start with Kendall. Could you go ahead and introduce yourself and kick us off?
Happily. Hello, my name is Kendall Baldwin. I'm currently based out of Cleveland, Ohio, in the Cleveland Church of Christ. But I grew up in New Jersey, so the Northeast United States is kind of my context for this conversation. I work for Hope Worldwide as the manager of U.S. chapter relations, and I've been doing that for a couple of years, and I'm 26 years old.
26. And you are currently on COVID exile in San Jose, California. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. I am trapped here with the sun. It's terrible.
Yeah. I being here in Minnesota, I really weep for you and feel bad for you being in California. So I will say a little prayer for you.
Thank you. And yeah. Flowers.
Santiago, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Also pray for me too, because I'm in San Diego, California right now.
Which will do.
Is absolutely miserable. Yeah. I'm part of the church here, and I'm 23 years old, currently pursuing a master's degree. That's actually probably the thing I need prayer for. But I've spent most of my years as a disciple in the East Coast in Maryland, a little bit of a time in Boston, which was great, but got a lot of love for the East Coast. Just grateful to be out in the warm weather right now. I am relishing it while it lasts.
Amen. And can you tell us just real quick about the project that you are working on?
Yeah, for sure. So I've been working on a project to gather some data on the perspectives of youth and the future generations on our fellowship of churches. So right now we have 10 young researchers from all over the world that are going to be working for doing a pilot survey for 4 months. We're going to do a formal training and try to be as rigorous as possible. But we're really excited. So it's going to be broadly speaking to intergenerational unity. But the way the project is designed is that the group as a whole is going to design the project, carry it out, and ultimately present it. So it's really, really exciting. And it's entirely youth-led. We got some great advisors. Hopefully Michael's going to help us out a little bit. But yeah, that's essentially what's going down.
That's right. I did agree to that, didn't I?
Yeah, I got you on the hook now. It's recorded.
Yeah, now, right. Now it's public. Now it's public. I can't back out. That's fantastic. All right, I think we're continuing to go down the age scale a little bit. Let's go to Bryant.
Yeah, I'm Bryant Vigout. I'm 21 years old, just turned 21 in December. I'm currently going to the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, part of the Two Cities Church, studying out computer science.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Nice. Appreciate you joining us. I'm going to move on and not let you say anything more right now, Bryant, because I know that that won't be a problem as we go on.
I would do the same.
Yeah, you'll get plenty of time on the mic. Let me go over to Valerie. Can you introduce yourself for us?
Yeah, so my name is Valerie Holland. I'm 17 years old. I'm in high school right now. Just a classic Kingdom kid. I was baptized my sophomore year. Since then, I've been able to I've been on the diversity team, which has been awesome, studying out some of Michael's books. So, yeah.
Nice. And Valerie, do you know where you're going to college yet?
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say. I am from the Quad Cities right now. I go to the Quad Cities Church of Christ. And then in college, I'm planning to go to St. Xavier University in Chicago.
Nice. Okay. St. Xavier. Are you doing track there?
Yeah.
All right. Valerie is smart and a really good athlete, so glad to have her with us. And now I'm going to break the trend of going down in age, and we're going to go to the old guy of the group, excluding myself, Jordan.
I'm glad you said excluding yourself. Don't make me look too old.
Right.
But I'm Jordan Massey. My wife, LaToya, and I, we're campus ministers and evangelists down in Atlanta. We lead the campus ministry down here. We have a 2-year-old son named Cam. We're pregnant with our next one. And I'm born and raised in Atlanta. So excited for this talk. And I my day-to-day is filled with the next generation. So I'm excited for this conversation.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you to all of you for making the time to be here with us. And I really think we're going to gain a lot from this. And so I appreciate what you guys are willing to share with us and give. And I want to get into some of the generational challenges and, you know, talk about the idea of what are some of the obstacles for your generation and why so many appear to be losing their faith, either, you know, turning, definitely the generation under 35 is turning away from God in numbers that are rather unprecedented in the United States. And even in leaving those who grew up in the church, the number of them leaving the church is very concerning and something that, you know, we want to delve into a little bit. But before we get into some of that, I want to give you guys just a brief, you know, a few seconds or minute or whatever. I know you could talk about this question alone for a long time, but what excites you about being a follower of Jesus? What you know, gets your motor going with that? Why do you follow Jesus? Let's start there. And you guys can just jump in, whoever wants to go first with that.
Yeah, I can start out. And I'm 31, by the way. I didn't say my age earlier. For me, there's so many different reasons. We had this question recently in one of our groups. And the thing that I was thinking about then, same thing on my mind now, is just the how different it is living life with Christ in your inner being, and that the confidence that brings, the security that brings. Before I followed Christ, I was either extremely confident when the things I got confidence from went great, or extremely insecure when they didn't go great. But to go through life centered with Jesus is just one of the most powerful things of all time.
Fantastic.
That cough was perfectly timed, Michael. That was fantastic.
Well, now see, I have a cough button on here, so the audience didn't hear me cough. Only you guys did.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I think for me, just the, like, God just blows my mind. Like, the fact that we can have, like, a relationship with the divine is something that every time I think about it, just, like, stops me in my tracks. Like, it just really refocuses my brain to be like, that's baffling. Like, we have a partnership with, like, a divine being who has given us, like, a no-pressure chance to be the cure to the curse of sin. Like, we have no pressure. There's nothing on our back. Jesus has taken all of sin and death and ended it and has invited us to join him to that. And I think that just excites me. Like, that whole adventure, like, I think the two scariest words that Jesus ever says is follow me. Mm. Like, it's just this whole, like, whoa, like, what do I do now? Like, there's a decision that has to be made, like, right when those words come out of his mouth. And I think just the ability to see God's glory so close. Like, we're like frontline interacting with the divine, doing stuff. Like, we're on the mission. Like, it's crazy. I think that's just the so exciting. Like, it's so mind blowing to think of. And we can lose sight of that as disciples. I think that's just, it's so cool to be able to have that.
Well, all right. That's good sharing there, Brian. That's good testimony.
Sermon right there.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, thinking about God's glory, I think he made us glorious. The fact that he made us capable of glorifying him is what really hypes me up. I am a people person. It motivates every aspect of my life. It's why I do the work that I do. It's why I wave at people. You know, I'm living in the Midwest. People are like, oh, did you start doing that when you moved to Ohio? Like waving at people across the street. No, just people excite me. The mystery of altruism. I can get really caught up in all the evil that happens in the world and it can darken my heart and make me so scared and so sad. But our desire to think toward heaven, to think toward goodness, to just ponder how we can make the world better, that drive, which as people have kind of already mentioned, it is, you know, strengthened through being able to view Jesus's example, that hypes me up every single day.
Wow.
Ooh, Kendall throwing out the big words. I'm a struggle to follow that, but I'm gonna do my best out here. No, I think what's so cool about following Jesus is that it's both the most affirming adventure where you're reassured every step of the way that you are enough, but it's also has this element where it challenges you to your core. And just when you think I've done enough introspection, this layer of the onion keeps getting peeled back more and more and more. And it's this continual growth process. But just as far as the outward side of it, I mean, God's all about building family. And that's what motivates me is when I think about how blessed I am with the family that I've been given and to be adopted into that and to get to call Jesus my brother, God my father, and then ultimately just have an amazing brothers and sisters that have unconditional love for one another all around the world. I think it's the most beautiful thing and it deeply, deeply excites me to get to be a part of that.
Man, that's amazing. And I don't want to out anybody on the call here, but while we were talking there, one of you put in the group chat that they looked up the word altruism after Kendall shared it.
I will claim it. It was I, said Jordan. It was I.
That's all right, man. That's how you learn. Kendall's an impressive individual, so amen.
I was an engineer in college, so I do numbers, not words. That's my excuse. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, that's fair, man. I don't do numbers, so rock on. We all have our own thing going. And I, by the way, am the exact opposite of Kendall. She's like, I love people and being around people. I'm like, yeah, okay, me not so much. I have to work at that a little more because I kind of like to cave up if left to my natural devices and grab a book and not go anywhere. So Kendall, we're the exact opposite. But Valerie, you got an answer for us?
Yeah, for sure. And I think similar to what Santiago said was, I think what really excites me is just this idea of like connection and being connected not only to like brothers and sisters all over the world who you might not even meet yet, but you're already, you know, brothers and sisters. It just blows my mind. And not only that, but being connected to like the one who created you and being connected to the one who created the universe just is insane. And just having that bond, I think that is really exciting about God.
Man, I am inspired and fired up by you guys. Just doing that. That's just the opening question, just to sort of get things rolling before we even dig in. And so that's amazing. And I know people listening are inspired just to hear young people have such great answers about what they love about following Jesus and why they're following Jesus. So let me jump into our topic a little bit here, and I'm going to throw this a question out for you guys. Again, open question. Whoever wants to answer it, or you can, you know, if you want, if you're like, no, I don't like that question, but let me tell you about this. That's fine too. But here's my question: what do you think some of the primary differences are between maybe the way the older generations want to live out and express their faith and worship versus the way that, you know, folks your age, and we'll define younger generations here as maybe 35 and under. And I know there's big differences too between 33-year-olds and 17-year-olds, but there's some generalities between the way the younger generations want to live out and express their faith and worship versus these older generations. So what are some of those differences? What can be difficult for you guys?
I can start out with this one. We were having a conversation recently, a couple of campus ministers and I, about this. And one of the things that we found ourselves discussing is the difference of what the generations focus on and what is the most important value. So one way to describe it would be Jesus is full of grace and truth in John 1, right? And I think what you can, you know, maybe it's an overgeneralization, but I think a lot of the older generation can focus like almost dogmatically on truth. What is right doctrine? Mm. What is the true way to live? It's yes or no, it's black or white. There's no middle ground. Fully committed. I mean, and all those things, praise God, that Jesus is full of those things. While the younger generation, it almost seems like they can dogmatically focus on grace. And one of the biggest words I think generationalists talk about nowadays is safety and the idea of you're a safe place. Mm-hmm. There's safe places on most of college campuses across the U.S. where you can just go and be safe. And, you know, there's a lot of discuss there about why it's so important. I think social media and all kinds of things have raised the anxiety level. So people are constantly looking for a place to find safety and escape other people's opinions. And so what I've seen is rather than people speaking the truth to each other, and for that to be the most important piece in the younger generations, is a lot more of, are you a safe place to talk to? Can I feel safe around you? When I come to you, do I feel like I could be honest and not get any feedback back? And that becomes the highest value, I think, a lot of the younger generation can focus on is that safety over truth.
And let me break in on that real quick before anybody else answers and say, I think that's great insight. I've definitely heard that conversation before. How does it make you guys feel, for instance? Because I know folks my age and older hear that, and the tendency, and I'm not saying they all do this, but there's a tendency to go, safety, what a bunch of snowflakes. Like, toughen up and, you know, get some hide to you and let's move on. How did those sort of responses resonate with you guys, if that makes sense? If maybe just one person wants to filter that question.
I guess I can talk a little bit about that. I think the very first thing I think of when I think of sort of safety is like the other day I heard this quote from in C.S. Lewis in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, like the beaver character says, like, oh, Aslan's this big lion, And then the girl in the story says, "Oh, that sounds really scary. Is he safe?" And the beaver's like, "No, he's not safe, but he is good." And so I think even just understanding like that, even God isn't safe. Like God is not a safe like person, but he is good. There's like a lack of safety there. In terms of like hearing this sort of generational, like sort of like when I was your age, I walked uphill both ways through blizzards. I think just that it's kind of unfair in a way. I think there can be an overgeneralization towards like the whole group. I think that there's a lot of brushing over of mental health issues that goes on from the older generation to younger people, which is due to a lot of phone use, to be honest. Like a lot of phone use causes a lot more lack of, you know, close relationships with other people. There's distance between electronic screens. And I think a lot of that contributes to that, kind of a tangent. But so I think some of that safety comes from just generational. And I think that older generations will also recognize that they look for safety, but maybe in a different way. And maybe they don't necessarily word it the same way. But I think all of us really look for safety. We look for comfort and we look for places where we can be like accepted as we are.
Great.
Yeah, I can add on to that. I mean,
yeah.
I love that example that you used, Brian, about the Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I think about just this duality of even the character of Jesus and how he was both commanded respect and there was this reverence, but yet he was so approachable to even regardless of status or who you were, age, and kids even would come up to him, right? And so it's almost like there's this duality that different generations resonate with a little bit more. But to me, part of the issue is really being able to empathize. I get it. Like I get some of the frustration the older generation can feel, mostly because I think young people also experience a similar frustration towards the older generation when it comes to other things. I mean, this is like a lighter subject, but like for a young person teaching somebody technology and trying to get them to like figure out, I remember like my granddad got his first like cell phone where he was texting and just like the word that the letters per minute, it was I could not do it. I couldn't bear it. And so, but you know, but when people are in different circumstances and grow up with vastly different experiences, what's hard for me is different. And what's hard for each person is going to look different. So I think it's really just about this fight to try to understand the culture that we grew up in, what we were exposed to, and why those kind of value sets, those things that we really care about are there.
Hmm. That's good. Let me steer back and you can continue to answer that side trail. But let me steer back and throw back to the sort of original question about some of the differences in expression in life and worship between the generations. If anybody had any further thoughts on that.
I definitely do. I love the way that, go ahead.
Go ahead, Kendall. Kendall, you go ahead and then we'll let Valerie share. All right.
Great. We're doing our best, y'all. So I love the way Jordan described generational differences, highlighting the strengths of each. I heard a very neutral, if not positive, reflections on those differences. I think I definitely agree older generations can hold up truth and say how amazing that God has revealed this. You know, what power that this truth has. And I also agree that safety is important. So I think what's great about those differences is that they are both important. You know, the reason that we have and want an intergenerational church is because we get the whole picture of Jesus. We get the strengths from all of the wonderful groups that we have. Something I want to highlight to explain or attempt to explain my positions on safety is, yeah, I felt pretty uncomfortable questioning authority growing up. I thought that I would get kicked out of church if I asked the wrong question. There was such a value on having congruent thinking that I thought I wasn't allowed. So I heard an explanation of Jesus as deconstruction yesterday, and it really resonated with me, that this idea that his disruption of dominant culture to expose truth and love. I think that idea kind of connects the two, if we're explaining them as poles of thinking, safety versus truth and grace. I think creating a safe space to question, to throw off tradition, perhaps in some ways, really helps get us to a place of truth and grace. So I just want to say that I agree with Jordan's explanations of the differences, and I value them, and I see how they can work together even.
That's good. Valerie?
Yeah. So what everyone has been saying has been awesome. And I love this idea of how people just from any generation are like craving to feel like safe and comfortable. And I would think kind of like where it steers off between the generations is, I think the younger generation, I feel like especially right now, we're kind of like leading this generation of like activists. And there's kind of like this mindset of, if it doesn't feel right, then it's not right. So if they feel threatened, or if they feel like something isn't going, you know, if it's like threatening how they feel, then they're going to be trying to be comfortable by saying something about it, or they're going to like, that's how they're going to be comfortable, by letting their opinion be known. And I think more towards the older generation, that they're going to be more comfortable by kind of this kind of having the mindset of saying that, well, this is the way that it's been, so we're just going to, you know, keep it this way. So I feel like both want to be comfortable, but it's just very different for them to pursue, both of them.
And I can comment on that. I really think that's a valuable insight, Valerie, about the traditions of, because in any generation, like, there's always traditions that once people have been doing it for a long time, it's hard to think differently. And if you continue to be creative, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? But I think, how does this come out in a worship service? I think there is immense, there's value in different parts of a worship service. So like in one, on the safety, or just on the experience, when you value truth most, then the sermon becomes the most important part of the service. So a long sermon, I mean, that's very much on strong on what we should be doing and not be doing, for instance. But I think a lot of younger people, this experience that I feel like this is the safest place in the world, is more that's attained in other ways, like whether it's in worship, whether it's in a guided meditation, whether, you know, just kind of different kind of experiences. And I think that can be where there can be friction. And the beauty is when there's you put the value on both, right? The other piece what you were sharing, Valerie, about, I think for a lot of younger people, social issues and what is going on around the world is in our face more than ever before. Because it's not just the news, it's not just the newspaper, but it's all over social media. It's all over the different groups that we're in. It's all over YouTube and every single platform that's on our phones. And so I think while in the past there's been more tradition, especially in our fellowship, of, well, we don't talk about what's going on out in the world, because when we come to church, we don't want to hear about that anymore. We want to listen to Jesus. I think there is in the younger generation, though, well, my friends are talking about this, I'm hearing about this, can I get guided thinking at church about these social issues? I know it's more than a generational, it's also a cultural difference. But I think that's also where some friction comes out, is, okay, how do we take these two different views, there's value in both, and meld them together in a beautiful way? It's an ongoing conversation. I think it's healthy.
So that's a great point, Jordan, and all of you are making great points. Let me throw this out. How does, and I know I'm asking you to speak for, as a representative, you know, which is a challenging thing to do in and of itself, but how does it tend to come across to younger generations if you are part of a church, let's say, as Jordan was kind of alluding to, that maybe has made the decision to not talk or guide through issues like race and politics and some of those things? Does that in and of itself, the silence on some of these societal issues, justice and so on, and presenting a biblical view of justice, Does that present obstacles for your generation, and why do you think that is, if so?
Yeah, I can share about that real quickly. I mean,
go ahead. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's something that I've seen and observed as a general pattern in our church, just as you described it, Michael. Where I think the motivation behind that is to preserve unity. It's this, like, if we don't talk about it, if there's silence, then our church will be quote unquote unified. I think the problem is that, and I think a lot of what the younger generation feels is that it doesn't feel like true unity if there's all these things burning in our hearts, and we know that there's like these disagreements that we have with the older generation or whatever division you want to talk about, and yet there doesn't seem to be a channel to express that. And it's hard not just for those that are coming, like they're a part of the church, but when you know, are especially trying to reach out to your friends, bring them out, they haven't, you know, that's a huge part of what's going in their mind. And if the person that has the pulpit is very dismissive of those causes or just shuts it down completely, then I think it's hard for that younger generation to resonate with where does Jesus align with, can he really be relevant and speak to all these really important things that I see in the world. And so I think we're uncomfortable with that overlap. And as a result of the silence, to be honest, my perception is that as disciples, we can be really, really immature in having these conversations when we do. It's almost like all these years we haven't talked about it. And now people are starting to talk about it. And you see, like, you're on, like, I'm probably one of the only young people left that scrolls through my Facebook feed, and I'm still seeing, like, oh my goodness, disciples, like, go at it. And that doesn't reflect the heart of Jesus either. So I think there's an immaturity there in not being able to have these conversations. I don't know if Sunday service has to be the place where we have those conversations, but to not talk about it at all, young people are going to find other ways to do it, if not in the church.
That Santiago and how it's going to be talked about somewhere, and the thirst for younger people to get direction, how the consequence of not talking about it can lead to immaturity. It is really difficult to talk about, right? I think there's so many different views. There's so many different perspectives. I think even with the truth that what we've been talking about, you know, already, is I think there is this idea amongst the older generation that's really amazing, that the pulpit is sacred. That's, man, you know, what you say from the pulpit really matters. And while the younger generation doesn't usually have that, like, hey, well, I have messages and podcasts every minute of the day, you know, the pulpit's just another, and there can almost be a disvaluing of those things. And so I think there's a really healthy way. What I've seen the issue is that there's two camps on either side. And I think a few people venture to figure out, where do you meet in the middle? So it's either you don't talk about it at all, or you over talk about it. And then one camp is, well, we can't become, our church isn't political. We're not a kingdom of this world, so we're not going to talk about it. The other side is, well, I need to figure out how to be ministered to, and this is really affecting my discipleship. Please, let's talk about it. I think there's a lot of value in how you teach in your books, Michael, about, man, really careful with a ton of wisdom, saying, man, how do we bring kingdom focuses, kingdom allegiance at every step around the corner, lift up the values of King Jesus? And so you're talking about it in a measured way. I think that is where ultimately we all need to land, but it is difficult breaking out of traditions, and it's also difficult as a younger generation saying, let's just not, you know, every Sunday is about this, because, you know, ultimately you don't want to lift up that agenda of this world. You want to lift up the agenda of the kingdom. And I think that's where the value is.
That's a great point.
I think along with that as well, I think those conversations become unapproachable when our unity has to become agreement. Like, as soon as unity becomes agreement, then it's like, we can't talk about this stuff, because what if we disagree at the end of the conversation? But if our unity just becomes like an awareness of other people and like a relational conversation about a topic, then those conversations become more approachable because it's a conversation with family. Like, this is a family conversation that we should have, because some people in our family feel uncomfortable, whether it's race, whether it's like violence or politics. Like, we can talk about these things in like that quote unquote safe space, but it's existing within the kingdom, and we can guide each other using the word. Like, it's such a benefit to have these conversations in the kingdom as opposed to not in the kingdom, because we're going to miss out on like the biblical truth. Like, we don't have a brother there to be like, bro, you're way off. Like, you're doing it from a wrong, like, you have a good heart, but maybe your perspective's off. Like, look at this verse, like, you know?
Yeah. Ladies, any thoughts on that? I got another question, but I don't want to cut you off.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's so big. It's important. I'm finding it hard to find the words.
Okay. If they come to you, definitely come back to it. I'll ask kind of a similar question in a little bit different way here. If there's, you know, thinking from the perspective of the younger generations, is there, and this is our aim here, let me say this first, is not to be negative or to say, you know, it's bad to be old or shame on the older generations, we're messing everything up. It's not that at all. But there is a difference in culture and worship styles and preferences, you know, that come about. You know, just from one big one, for instance, is I think in my generation growing up, I mean, I remember growing up with four television stations, and you had to adapt to what was on one of those four stations. If you wanted to watch TV, that's what you were watching, you know, and all of life was kind of that way. And so you just learned to adapt yourself to whatever was there. Whereas you guys tended to grow up more in a world of, you know, my son will come in and be like, I want to watch The Office season 3, episode 12, 7 minutes in. And
you better flip to that immediately. That is a good episode. Right,
yeah. Yeah. And he knows all of them. And so, but it's just, you know, it's just sort of representative of a very customized world that they're, you know, that you guys grew up with. And so that creates even different approaches and, you know, experiences of worship and that sort of thing. So here's my question, though, given that context, is if you were given a magic wand and could say, man, there's one or two things I would change right now about the way that we do church, because I know even in an intergenerational church, the older generations tend to have the influence and shape sort of the life in many respects of the worship and the traditions that we do and that kind of stuff. So from the perspective of the younger generations, and these can be big things, little things, whatever, if there's one or two things you could say, man, this would really resonate with my generation if we could change this or start doing this or stop doing this, what would that be?
Well, first of all, thanks for bringing up The Office. That's a wound for me right now since it's gone from Netflix. And I was not expecting
the worst way to start 2021.
I just was not expecting to be hit so hard by that in the middle of this podcast.
I'll tell you, so I have two young guys living here, you know, and there is an immediate demand for us to get Peacock. So we had had to sign up for Peacock.
Did you really?
Yes, so that they could watch The Office. And now they have these super fan episodes of one of the seasons where it's like extended, you know, 4 or 5 extra minutes. And so they're just in all their glory.
Oh, I got to get on that now. I didn't hear about that.
If you want to accidentally slip that passcode into the chat, bro, like, I won't complain.
We'll talk.
Yeah. But in terms of your question, I think the thing when I think of this question, like a thing that really hits me from being like a kingdom kid growing up in the church, I think a lot of times, like these sort of teen and campus years, where I personally was often treated like a kid, even like I was a kid. But in a lot of ways, once I became a disciple, like I put childish ways behind me, you know, like I had a step up of maturity, a step, but you know, like I started really wanting deep conversations. I wanted adults to challenge me on things in my life. I really wanted them to, you know, to really walk with me and like all that kind of stuff. And I feel like I have two things. That's one of them is like a really big thing. I think is like when teens and campus people become disciples, like there is a, I feel like there is like a step up. Like there's a discipleship which takes place even over being just a campus student or being just a teen. And I think that could really benefit, like, I want to participate with adults who, you know, have done that. Like, I have, like Ben Wood in Minneapolis, Mark Specht, Susan Johnson led the teens. She's the best. Susan Johnson's, like, literally the best. Even as a teen, she treated me like an adult. She respected what I had to say. She, like, super valued my opinions. I just felt so loved and, like, I felt so cared about and respected. Like, I was a teen. I deserved no respect. Like, I was reckless and really dumb. And she just treated me with so much love and respect, like as a disciple. And I think that's a big thing. I think along with that, something I notice which takes place in my life a lot is like a lot of those behaviors from the parents are just sort of passed down without a lot of the reasons behind the behaviors also being passed down. And so I see among me and a lot of people around me in campus, you know, we have like encouragement dates where we like hang out, and they're not like formal dates, but like we hang out in big groups. And I see a lot of people sort of like, yeah, like we're using this whole verse about encourage one another daily, but we don't really know, like maybe there's a lack of the sort of reason behind it. Or we have these, you know, we've got different times of like, why do we do Bible talks a certain way or Devos a certain way? And like, why is campus structured the way it is? I think there's a lot of good principles behind the different things, but none of the things are explicitly biblical in that they're not like commanded in the Bible. Like God doesn't say you got to do Devos this way and it's always 7 to 9. If it's not 7 to 9, like, oh, we don't like that. Like, you know, like everything is, there's a lot of room for choice and for decision making. And I think, like, as a Kingdom kid, my parents made those decisions when they were in the Minnesota campus. Like, they were in the University of Minnesota campus ministry, and they made some of those decisions which are impacting me today. And I think sometimes with leadership, the older generation can get a little like, oh, this is tradition, or this is how we set things up, so let's not change it. Like, we set it up, it worked great for us. Like, let's not shift from this. And then I'm like, hey, I want to make some of my own decisions. Like, are we sure this is the right way to do things? Is this right for our generation? Is this going to be most beneficial? And so I think if we could change one thing, it's not like we're changing the whole system, but we're changing the ability of the system to be changed. Like, just the ability to be like, let's have the young people make changes and have those be okay. Like, let's treat them like adults and have those things be okay. And that's my thoughts.
That's good.
Nice. I think similar to that. I think one thing, if I could change, would just be having high expectations for the youth. And I know, like, at first, I'm taking an education internship class, and we're talking about classroom culture. And they say to have a positive classroom culture, you're supposed to have high expectations for your students. And at first, I was like, whoa, like, don't have them too high, because then I might get discouraged or something and like that. And they're like, no, like, having high expectations lets your students know that you believe in them. Now, the only thing is you have to provide them with the tools and you have to provide them with the help to meet those expectations. But just having them, it just lets you know that, like, oh, someone believes in me and that I can do really well. So it just makes me want to try harder, you know what I mean? So I think if I could change one thing, and this is just speaking as far as my generation goes, but I think just holding us, kind of like pushing us to keep going. And okay, like, oh, that's awesome. Like, you're speaking from the church. Like, what's next? Like, keep asking, like, what's next? And not just like settling, like, oh yeah, like they're singing, like, you know, that's good. But like, just keep pushing us.
That's really.
Yeah, go ahead, Kendall.
Go ahead, Michael.
Nope, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think sometimes I don't realize something bothers me until someone presents an alternate solution, and it makes me emotional. You know, I don't realize how much as a young person I sometimes feel undervalued until, yeah, I'm hearing Bryant and Valerie talking about give the youth a chance. Let us try something. Let us make a mistake, and then we'll fix it together, you know? But something I was thinking about, I think we've been making a gradual shift. I've heard about this idea for a few years now, bringing the church to people, mm-hmm. instead of bringing people to church.
Mm.
If I could flip a switch today, that is definitely one of the things that I would put at the top of the priority chain. Yeah, I think I've seen people addressing this in with the idea of community outreach. You know, if our church disappeared tomorrow, would our neighbors know that we were gone? Are we building relationships in love? Or are we just inviting them to church? Are we aware of community needs? And I think COVID has been a bit revealing in this way. I love the sense of family that we have within our fellowship, within the just faith community in general. But I think when our resources are limited a little bit, now that's meeting in person, being out and about, for me, it's really shown that, yeah, I don't have as much access to my neighbors, to my community as I would hope to be able to, just be a continuous light, to really, yeah, have the opportunity to share in the joy of faith with other people. So I don't know exactly what it looks like, but just that general idea. You know, one of my most controversial opinions right now is I might be fine if I never explicitly asked someone to come to church with me ever again. I might be totally fine with that idea if my life is so full of love and depth that I have the opportunity to talk to people about Jesus, about faith, about love, about interpersonal responsibility in other ways. So I'm not saying I don't want people to come to church. I just want it to be just as common for us bringing the church to other people.
Mm. No, I hear you. That's great stuff, Kendall. And you may be interested. I actually have a episode on the podcast coming up very soon here that's entitled Why the Early Church Had No Evangelism Plan.
Amen.
And so we'll kind of get to that, how they grew with no evangelism plan. So anyone else? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I would just echo on that. I appreciate you sharing that, Kendall, that question of what would be missing if you took the church out of the community. It is really incredible. We've asked ourselves that recently, and I think I had to even look at the campus ministry that I serve in and had to go, wow, like on our campuses, I mean, there would be true discipleship that was missing. There would be a sense of community for people that truly wanted to follow Jesus with right doctrine that would be missing, you know, prayerfully. There's others on campus too, but man, I don't know, like, I don't think people would miss us because of the way we loved or like the way that we served or the, I don't know if the, we, you know, we're in downtown Atlanta, several of our campuses, and it's, I don't know if the people, the poor people right across the street from our campus would really feel like, oh man, I can feel it that they're not here anymore because the way they loved me and gave to me. I think that's really valuable. And I do think service is a huge piece of the younger generation and how they want to use service to care about people and to love people. And I do want to say though, that I think all of us agree, even with all this, that we stand on the shoulders of giants. And that we're grateful for the older generation and how we can have this conversation because of what the older generation did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I do think there is a need for just kind of the old adage, right? That we're married to the mission, not the methods, right? And that, man, our principles don't change, but, you know, it can look different and that's okay. And it should look different just as much as the soul talk was a revolutionary idea 60 years ago, even before a lot of other churches were doing small groups, the soul talk was there. And what are our revolutionary ideas now? The couple of things that I'll throw out that I've thought of are one, like the length of our sermons. The TED talk is such a huge phenomenon in the low attention span of the youth. And the attention span's so low. So anything about over 25 minutes is hard to pay attention to. And I think there's value in going, okay, hey, how long are our sermons? Like, if we really want to pull in young people and not scare them away, that should be a discussion that, you know, should be had. And, you know, if our Bible talk's taking the community to other people, like taking the church to the people, we've kind of done like a rotation where every other week, you know, COVID's a little different, but every other week the Bible talk will go into the community to do something. And whether it's playing a sport like at the local field or basketball court, or whether it's going into the community to serve, or one. But then the other week you come together and you talk about Jesus of the Bible, and next week you go find other people to interact with them. But anyways, just different ideas like that. I think young people are really trying to find community with each other in a way that's safe, that they can really feel it instead of just know that we're close, but feel that we're close.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I know I already talked, but I wanted to also just say, like, Kendall, everything you said, I super loved, I super appreciated it. I thought that was awesome. I think, like, going back to that briefly, I think that sort of how do we go to people instead of having people come to the church? How do we bring the church to people? I think when we think of hospitality, we think of, like, how do we use our church as, like, a home? And keep it warm, keep it loving, keep it friendly, and invite people to our home. But I love how Jesus just goes up to tax collectors. It's like, I'm going to your home. Like, I'm going to go. I still want you to be at home, but it's your home. Like, I'm having dinner at your place. Like, I feel like that's such a different mindset that we can transition in as a church. Is like, how do we get into the head of Jesus? And, like, it's bold. I feel like a lot of people are going to be very uncomfortable of, like, I want to be in your space. I want to be with you. I want to love you in your space. But I think that's where that beginning of that transition comes in, is like when we stop viewing our churches as a home and instead start viewing them as a home base for going to other people's homes, you know?
Yeah, but I'm sorry, Brian.
You're good. It's super, super love what you said again. I was just going to, whatever.
Yeah, no, the only really quick point I want to make, I mean, so much has been said, I don't know how much I can add to it, but one of the conversations I love having is with my friends that aren't part of the church and don't really have an interest in joining it. And so I love asking them their thoughts and kind of from that outside view, like, what do you think? And one of the things I consistently hear back is that I love the community. I love the community that you have. A lot of my friends, they've known me over the years. I've moved around a lot. And they're amazed that, like, I have a place to stay wherever I go. They're amazed, like, you're there for 2 weeks and you already know all these people. What the heck? Now, they might think the dating culture is a little weird, stuff like that, but that's consistently what's going on. And so I think it's such a great, like, beautiful thing that we have. And to what Kendall, Brian, really what everybody's been sharing is, like, we got to find better ways to show that, to showcase that the community of Jesus stands out to anything else. The world can't rival it. And so it's just finding ways that we can to show that to people. If there's one thing though, like, and this might not speak to like the way I guess it does kind of speak to the way we do church. The one thing that does make our community struggle a little bit in my mind is that the model of the church is that we do things in our age group, essentially, or our life stage, which I get totally makes sense in so many different ways, right? But the challenge that comes alongside that is that I personally have to work really, really hard to get to know people outside of my generation. And we've been talking through a lot of these differences that we have. And so I think part of the reason that those exist, or that those, we don't really have empathy or understand each other, is because maybe we just don't really have friends that are outside of our life stage. Can you really call somebody that's 40, 50 years old, maybe outside of your parents, your friend? And so I don't know that changing how, like, our, you know, I think campus ministry, all those things make sense for logistical purposes, but maybe finding ways that those interactions, those bridges can be built in a different way so that we can deepen those ties and that community can even be more diverse and beautiful than it already is.
Amen.
You know, I love what you're saying about how people see the community, and that's the beauty of it, right? Is that, man, there's a deep love from Christ, that Jesus's prayer in John 17, that the world will know that God, you sent me because of their love and their unity for one another and how they're one, just like we're one. It's just amazing. And what we've seen is that while there are certain people will never come and be able to see the community, if the only way they're met is by cold contact evangelism on the side of the street, that they'll just never come, you know, the idea of going with somebody. I do think the younger generation can throw the baby out with the bathwater sometimes. We've personally in Atlanta seen a ton of fruit from just randomly walking up to people and inviting them out. I mean, like, we have a couple hundred people in the campus ministry here, and like 85% of them are met by cold contact. Like, that it's still completely possible for a random person on the side of the street to hear an invitation and come. And I think we should have faith in that. But I do think there's a lot of value in saying some people just never would do that. Some people would never just, hey, come to church, come to Bible talk, would never come. So how can we show people the community of Christ if without the first thing being church? And whether it's by taking your group to them and to a restaurant, to the basketball court, to a park to interact with people, just so they can see the differences, see the diversity, see the intergenerational. And because sometimes you got to see it to believe it. So I love what you were saying, Santiago. It's, man, people see the community, but sometimes we got to take the community to them or they'll never see it.
This is great stuff. So appreciate what you guys are saying. What if you could speak to my generation right now? What's one thing you would most want us to know about you guys or hear from your perspective? What's the biggest thing we need to know?
One thing immediately pops into mind for me, because I think part of the tension, and we've emphasized this throughout the podcast, but when young people start speaking out, maybe forming groups, really starting to have all these conversations, I think it comes across as we're trying to rebel against the church. We're ungrateful for everything that the previous generation has done and the culture. And what, you know, none of us would probably know God if it wasn't for that and already in place. So I'm personally, I feel so grateful for the wisdom, all these things that I've collected over the years. So I always, like, if there's one thing maybe that I wish just people had ingrained in the older generation, is that for the most part, of course there's exceptions, but the young people that I've been talking to, having these conversations with, just really, really trying to engage, they love the church. They love that there's so many things about it, of how it's helped them get to know God. We've already talked about the community. And so it's not from this place of I'm ungrateful or want to do away with everything, but really we're just trying to, if anything, make sure that the church can be around for years to come so that it can have just as much of that impact in our generation, our kids' generations, and finding ways to adapt. And so I think sometimes dialogue can be shut down because of assumptions of what the intentions are. And so maybe I would just really want to share, like, from my experience in these conversations, that's not what we're trying to do. Yeah.
Good.
I think, you know, do you know what's happening in The Office season 3, episode 5 is like a really good thing. You know, they need to know about the next generation.
That's solid advice.
Yeah. Do you know who Michael Scott is? I guess I can speak to that. I love what you shared, Santiago. And I think, we're in an interesting place in our movement right now that has never happened before, where some of the original heroes in the faith to us are, they're older and they're, whether they're stepping down through leadership or they're passing on. And I know that's not just in our movement, but it's a lot of other movements too in different churches also, that at some point the leadership has to be handed down. And so the decision makers are starting to be at a place where, you know, they have to decide if they're going to continue making decisions or pass it along. And I think I would say listen to the younger generation, invite younger people to the decision-making room, not just to hear their opinion and then go make a decision, but invite them to the room, make a decision. I really appreciate, for me, Tom Brown does that in a huge way at North River, and he pulls me into those conversations. And every step along the way, he has my voice heard. And I just really appreciate that. And I just don't know how much that's going on across the board. It's very hard when you have that kind of authority and you're used to it and you love it, because not in a bad way, but you really want to help people and you've seen how God has used you in the past. And I don't know if you guys know Hamilton, but George Washington, teach them how to say goodbye. But I think there's a beauty in that, that I think this generation right now, the oldest generation for us, has a chance to teach the next generation how to say goodbye. Not goodbye from discipleship, not goodbye from from leadership and make it have an influence, but goodbye to those role, those decision-making roles. And I think that the more you don't feel threatened by the younger generation, the more that there's more people in the room from different perspectives. We have to believe that that's actually going to help us move forward into this next generation. And so I think it's listening, it's hearing, and inviting people into the decision-making room.
Mm, that's good. It's funny you bring up Hamilton, because I believe that Valerie and Kendall were going to close out the show singing in the room where it happened. So
yes, that's the only reason I came.
Right.
That.
So we're looking forward to
the
that.
Room where it
anyone else want to chime in on that?
Yeah, that's my cue before I sing my duet.
All right.
I worry that there is a misconception that young people are leaving church because they don't care. And I would be bold enough to say, I think some people that I know that have left because they care so much. There's what I hope is somewhat of an indignation when we feel that Jesus is being misrepresented with a lack of compassion or through legalism. That can be so hurtful and frustrating. Mental health has been mentioned in this conversation, and I'll say I'm in therapy and I talk about church. I talk about ways in which I'm struggling to reconcile the lack of compassion I've seen in the place that's also the most compassionate for me. Mm-hmm. What it means to have that dual experience of pain and, you know, some of the most perfect love I've ever seen as well. So I think, I'll just echo what people have said. I beg adults to listen and to be willing to practice our snowflake-ness, if that's what someone would call it. It's incredibly important. For me, I know in my personal life, I know that I need healing of the pain that I've experienced in church to be able to continue being a part of this community. And that's something that I'm fighting for. And I know that a lot of people have fought for and decided to walk away because they didn't feel that they had people to fight with them. So I'm grateful to have those people. Some of them being from the older generation who will listen to me, who will fight for me and agree that there is a better way to show Jesus's love than some of the things that we have been doing. So that focus, that healing is important, and that being more Christ-like is important, it is such an important thing to continue to come back to.
Amen. Thanks for that. Thanks for that, Kendall. I really appreciate that. I think going off of that, just that sort of support that you were talking about, I think if I could tell the older generation like one thing, it's really helping them understand like what it would look like to walk together with us. I think it's, you know, like Jordan was talking about, getting young people into sort of decision-making positions, but not like leaving them there. Like, I think that's a misconception, is like, let's get them into the room and then they're going to want to kick us all out, so we'll just let them do it. And I think that's not what we want. That's not what we want. I think the working together, like taking us under your wing, helping us, guiding us, being with us as we make the mistakes that you made when you were our age. Like, I've appreciated that in my life so much when people do that for me. And when the older generation takes enough time to be like, how do you view things, right? Like, what do you think about this? You know, how should I approach this discipleship situation? And getting my advice on it, even though they're 20, 30 years more experienced as a disciple than me, just makes me feel so valued as a person. And so I think really understanding sort of how to have that that mentoring relationship, right? Not just teaching, because I think the older generation thinks of like teaching, like how can I teach? But really the mentoring that is involved in like walking with us, you know, even if it's uncomfortable, like even if it's sort of like a Joshua 80 years into his life, still taking the promised land, like even if it's like very unideal and uncomfortable, that the mentoring is so valued. It's so appreciated from young people, because it's honestly those whole, like in the Old Testament, when they set up the standing rocks of faith, when they meet God in a place and they set up rocks and they say God was in this place, when we have the experience to walk with our spiritual fathers in a way where we are seeing their standing stones and then setting up ours alongside them, I think that just does so much for the whole church.
Yeah, that's wow. Powerful. And you definitely got a preacher inside you someplace, bro, when you start talking about these scriptures and these rocks of remembrance and stuff. But I mean, I know for me, like I always had a mentor, a discipler in campus, but man, I found manhood because of older men investing in me and giving me their heart and helping me figure out how to go from being a boy to being a man. And that we have campus shepherds like that at North River that we really hope that it really helps people, that those deeper things that every younger boy or every younger girl carries with you. And I think, man, for me, it was Lamar Burnham. It was Chris Grubb. It was Steve Brand. It was these guys that, man, they weren't out on campus sharing their faith with me. I had other guys to do that. But man, they would ask me, man, like, how secure are you feeling? Like, do you feel like a man? Do you feel like you have strength to give to other people? Why not? Let's have a good conversation about that. And now, because they helped me grow and have that confidence in Jesus and find that strength in Jesus, then I can give that to other people. But it's just a different way of giving. And I think sometimes there's this idea on both sides of the older generation. Well, the younger people don't want to talk to us. The younger generation is like, well, the older generation doesn't want to talk to us. And it's, I know at North River back before COVID, whenever that was, like a million years ago, like the campus sat on one side of the aisle and then everyone else sat on the other side of the aisle. And there's very little crossings of the aisle. It's like the Red Sea, you know? And yet those small conversations, of someone that's older with so much wisdom investing in someone younger. I truly believe every younger person in our church needs a spiritual father and mother that is not their own father and mother. Like, yes, they should have their own father and mother be the first spiritual example, but just a spiritual mom and dad and uncle. I think, man, I know that changed my life. And so I just love what you're sharing, Brent.
Yeah, amen. And I really appreciate what both you guys shared about mentorship and just how important that is and not just leaving us, you know, having those high expectations and then actually helping us reach that. And also just letting us know it's okay if we don't always reach those high expectations and just kind of like adjusting those goals for us. But yeah, so I think one of the cool things, or one of the things I would like to say to like the older generation, and one thing I really love about the older generation is they want to help us so much, and it's awesome, and they want to see us succeed. But I think one of the ways that in the past, just observing or something like that, but I think one of the ways they do this is by like kind of like categorizing us and then kind of just assuming kind of like the help that we would need based on our category. And a lot of those times it works out great. Like, oh, we're teens, we need to learn about responsibility, and that could totally be true. But I think one thing that the younger generation needs, is we want to feel like you're like appreciating what we think, and we want to be asked like, hey, like, what do you guys want to learn about? You know, what do you guys need? And even if you have a total like experience, you might know, you might not, but just the feeling of being asked questions, and we just feel appreciated. And it's like, oh, they actually care about, you know, what I think. And being in the categories, you know, being with other teens and stuff like that is great. But I think in my generation, they're kind of taking a step back from, they want to take a step back from categories, and they put like this emphasis on kind of like uniqueness. And I think that, kind of what Santiago was saying earlier, I'm blessed to be in a very like close-knit church. We have a pretty small church, and we have like 3 teens right now in our teen ministry. So I've been like blessed to be able to like have really close relationship with people who are like 3 times my age, just because I'm, you know, I'm with smaller groups full of different, not only like diversity in culture, but like diversity in age. And it has been such a blessing because, you know, I get to learn from, you know, all the different type of age groups. So I think just letting us, I don't know, just kind of be more intermingled. And, you know, like I said earlier, that's how I love this idea of connection. I think we all kind of long for connection. And I think God kind of instilled that in us, you know, when we were made, that we want to be connected to something greater than just ourselves. And I feel like giving us the opportunity to be connected is kind of like what we're longing for.
That's phenomenal. Man, I'm learning so much from you guys. I feel like we could go on, and there's more questions I'd love to ask you. And I really do mean that in the sense of, you know, we want to take the gospel to all people, all generations. But there's a reality that the world I grew up in is fading away. It's a lot of memory now, and it's getting more and more distant. And it's we're really heading into your world, into your reality. And so, well, I think we have, it's not the Jurassic period, Bryant. Thank you for your smart aleck comment.
You're welcome.
I was not born in the Jurassic period.
Was it right afterwards?
Oh, my goodness. But no, you know, I mean, you know, we are heading into your reality. And in that sense, I think there's a lot of spiritual wisdom that you gain over years and can share with the younger generation. But you guys know the world that we're heading into. You guys know how to operate in that world. And so I think there's a lot that we can and need to learn from your generation. And so I am very grateful for you guys sharing. What an impressive group of young people, 17, 21, 23, 26, and 31. And so much wisdom here, so much grace and godliness. And I really appreciate it. And I don't want to miss that, or to just skate by that all of you are incredible and impressive, but, Valerie, the 17-year-old on the call, I don't know if you caught that. She's part of the diversity team in her church at 17 years old. So I think that's phenomenal.
Amazing.
And you all are doing impressive things. I do want to end with one really devastatingly important question before I let you guys go. Why is – we mentioned The Office a couple times on this show. Why, you know, this show went off the air 10 years ago, and why is it that this show so resonates with your generation and you guys just are obsessed with this show started like, you know, whatever, 17 years ago or something, ended 10 years ago? What is it about that show that so resonates with your generation?
I would love to talk on this. This is probably the most excited I've been. This most exciting about the most excited I've been about any one of the questions so far.
Bryant was born for this.
I was born for this question. Yeah. For me personally, it's a couple of things. I think the normalcy of the show just really, it's like, it's comedy, obviously, and it's funny, but it's also just incredibly dull. Like, it's the transformation of something incredibly dull into something with possibility and humor and fun and life. Like, it's the life out of the dullness, which I think really appeals to young people. Also, this show, it's very nostalgic. Like, even though I never watched it, like, when it was out, like, I was a little kid, I remember just my friend recommending it to me in high school. I remember watching it, like, while I left the church as a kid and, or like as a teen, and then watched it while I was sort of processing, and like Jesus was helping me and people in the church were helping me. And then The Office was just like also helping me kind of stay centered, like kind of just being like, okay, I'm going to figure out life. Like things are going to be okay. Here's some positivity. I'm trying to laugh every day. I'm trying to get through my depression. You know, like we're just, I think it's just it's the day to day. It's the nostalgia. It's like the real life that comes out of that really appeals. I know it appeals to me. It's just really fun. And it's easy to just like spend 20 minutes and be like, wow, short little episode, but it was really like, it's encouraging, honestly.
You're breaking it down. I mean, this is just, you got three points on that.
There we go. Take the notes.
Well, anyone want to add to that at all? Or did Brian sum it all up?
I would just say that it's super relatable. And I feel like the characters in there, like we all have a Michael Scott in our life. And it's just so funny because it's exaggerated a little bit. But
who's the Michael Scott in your life, Valerie? Let's name names. No, I'm kidding. Don't do that.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God.
People usually say I'm the Michael Scott in their life is usually what happens.
Nice. As long as you're not the Dwight Schrute.
Yeah, oh, even though some people aspire to be that. I mean, you know, to have a beet farm, that sounds amazing. I think people want to laugh, man. I just think people want to – there's so many terrible things in the world right now. There's so many – anywhere you look, there's reasons to feel depressed. And yet, man, just The Office is just absolutely hilarious. Even though I do think that this youngest generation, Valerie, maybe it's your generation, like I don't think they can handle that kind of humor as much anymore, not to over-sterilize, but the harshness – and the uncomfortability of The Office and that sarcastic humor. I don't know. I think humor is also changing. But that's another conversation. But
yeah, for me, it's both like super lighthearted and deep. But in the spirit of like getting to know other generations, Michael, what would you say like the younger generation needs to watch? Like what show? Yeah. Maybe we got to like rent the DVD from like the last Blockbuster.
Do I need to get the VHS?
I'll drive the last Blockbuster okay. on this planet if I need to. Just tell me, what do I got to watch?
That's a brilliant question and I appreciate it. And I'm going to answer that in a minute because I do like The Office, by the way. I do like The Office. I didn't at first. My 17-year-old got me into it and demanded that I watch it. And now they like watch it every night. And it's really funny, so much so that the other day I made a post on social media and it was just kind of lighthearted. But, you know, there was a lot of talk of like, you know, there's growing neo-Nazi groups around and all that. And so I kind of it just struck a thought and I took a Dwight Schrute quote and rechanged it. And I just said, you know, whenever I think of doing something, I stop and think to myself, would a Nazi do that? And if they would, I do not do that thing. Which, of course, his original quote was, would an idiot do that? And then I do not do that thing. And I put it on social media, and like all the young people got that there was a joke element to it and what it was referring to. And yes. All the people, oh, no. Most of the people my age were like, yeah, okay, I guess you wouldn't want to do what Nazis do. Like they totally kind of missed the joke. But I would say, if I could get you guys to watch any one show, and this is just my opinion, well, I'm gonna give you three. I'm gonna cheat and say the Andy Griffith Show from the 1960s, the Dick Van Dyke Show from the 1960s. These were both before I was born, so they're kind of like The Office to me. And then 1970s and 80s, Little House on the Prairie. I learned about community from Little House in the Prairie. And it's part of why when I, was introduced to our church in Milwaukee, I was like, I want to be part of a community like that. I just always wanted to from that show. I've gotten my sons into Andy Griffith. They love that show. But I can't get them into the other two, Dick Van Dyke or Little House on the Prairie. They just won't do it. But, so that's my answer. Hey, we're going to bring it to a close. Can I get you guys to all agree to let's do this again at some point? Cause I loved having you on. Y'all were phenomenal.
Thanks, Michael.
And I think very, very helpful. So thank you, so much to all of you. I appreciate it. Again, we could go on and on, but it's already the longest episode we've ever had, which is great, because it's all been good stuff and worth it. And if you're sitting here thinking, yeah, it was all really good except for that last 5 minutes on The Office, then you need to watch The Office the most.
Yes.
There's nothing else you get from this podcast.
That's right. to connect with these younger generations, you got to do it. You got to understand it. Thanks for joining me, you guys. Thank you so much, Bryant, Santiago, Valerie, Jordan, and Kendall. Appreciate having you on.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Well, my goodness, that just could not have been more fun and helpful and insightful. Such an inspiring group of young people. They're just amazing. I could have talked to them for a couple more hours. And so I hope you stayed through to the end. Hope you found it worth it. I think you did. I did. What a great group. And we'll definitely do more with them in the future. If you have any questions or comments for me or anyone in the group, you can, any of the young people that we had on today, you can hit me up at allthingstoallpeoplepodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for joining us on this special episode. We'll see you next time.